Welcome to episode 7 of the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake.
How's everybody doing? Or mainly, how are you doing? I mean, we can't really hear what everyone's saying. How are you doing, man?
I'm not doing too bad, thank you. I'm chugging along as per usual, as everyone is.
As it goes. I'm yeah. Well, have you had a busy week? I mean, I say that it's Monday.
It's still been busy, dude. Jesus. It's Yeah, creatively, it's been okay, but it's been mostly busy with other things, sadly, but still fitting it in where I can, as they
That's what she says.
Yeah. I have to, you know the way people are like, hold for applause? I have to hold for that's what she said after I say anything remotely.
I like that you answered with how your week has been in a creative sense. That was interesting.
That's how I try and look at things. You know, when you allot your time and you have like, well, this is how much time I should be sleeping. I don't stick to that usually. This is how much time I have normal, boring person work. And yeah. I'm like, where's the good stuff, the social stuff and the creative stuff?
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, I did it my first Sunday service in a while on Sunday, obviously. I think it'd been like 3 weeks since I did one, just life, family, got in the way, and it was really good to be back, and I was fired up creatively after it. And I know, just really quickly before this call, I showed you something that I had in mind for an idea for a possible tutorial Tuesday. Don't know if I'll be using that one, but it's just good. Like, I was thinking to myself earlier, tutorial Tuesday tomorrow morning, don't have any ideas in mind for it. I was just like thinking, and then it was almost like, you know, when you're tired and you don't want to go for a run, or even just want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like that creatively, where I'm too, I don't know, worn out to even think about attempting creating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know exactly what you mean, man. It's weird because there's different types of creativity as well, isn't there? If you're getting paid for something, if you're on like a consultant gig or whatever it is, if you're working freelance or you're working for someone in-house and you're getting paid to be creative, you do have to have that switch that you can turn on and off. But when it's your own stuff, sometimes you're just sitting around waiting for lightning to strike.
Yeah. For me, it's more so these days, it's literally about like, Lloyd, get your ass in gear. You're going to create something. And if I can't convince myself to get my ass in gear, 9 out of 10, I will end up with something I'm pretty happy with. But it's, for me, the biggest struggle is getting myself in the zone. Yeah. To do it. That's what I struggle with. But one thing I've been like learning lately is if I just start to just like, oh, I'll do something tiny, like a little thing. Next thing I know, I'm energized and I can't not create something. You know, like when you're in bed in the morning and you don't want to get up and you're like, oh, I got a big day ahead. And then you go up and you know, I'm just going to go make a coffee. I'm going to make a coffee, and you make a coffee. And then you hear something interesting. And then suddenly, if someone was to say, go back to bed now, you'd be like, I literally can't. I need to do something. I'm awake. It's kind of like that for me. It's like, oh, if I just dip my toe into the creative juiced pool, which sounds gross, actually. But if I dip my toe into those juices, then I'm suddenly, next thing I know, I'm going down the kamikaze slide in my undies. You know, I'm like, woo! Ooh, here we go. It's creative time.
Once you've started something, it's a lot harder to quit it and easier to carry on. So I did it myself at the weekend. Like, from the very brief view you can see in my background, I'm a very messy person. And the entirety of my house is untidy at all times. But on Sunday, I thought, I'm going to finally sort out that bookshelf and put stuff up. And then once I'd done that, I was in the mood to hoover and tidy everywhere else a little bit more. So it's harder to quit once you just put one foot in.
Yeah. Yes. Do you know what? Yeah. So true. And I suppose that's a bit of midweek motivation for y'all. If anyone's like, you know, I've got to finish a new project I'm working on. I got to take photos for lecture notes that I'm working on, or I just want to make a new video for social media. Start small. Just dabble in something. Just think, oh, I'm not going to get showered and dressed for this video. I'm just going to record myself testing out the visual. And the next thing you know, you will be shower dressed, your hair will be done, you'll be hyped to do it, and you'll be complaining that you have to stop to go out for dinner with your other half or something, you know? So I guess that's some midweek motivation for y'all.
Yeah.
But the structure of today's episode.
The structure? What is this word? Structure? There's no such structure. There's I think we're gonna begin like all good mystery movies and start at the end.
Brilliant.
And I think we're gonna lead with the viewers, listeners questions first, and some of the discourse about the last episode and some questions that have been sent in. And then we'll ease into some creativity. But just before that, I did watch your Sunday service, not live, because I was tidying at the time and I didn't realize you were doing it. But I noticed your slip of the tongue where you exposed yourself and called me your partner.
Yeah. I went to say partner in crime and then I stumbled and I was trying to call you my boyfriend, actually. So then I could say to Kaylee, I'm sorry, I've moved on.
You're doing it just for the thumbnail.
Aquaman has found his aqua boy.
Just for the thumbnail.
Yeah. I love that you're pretending to play it cool, like you weren't stalking me because I'm your aqua boy.
Shall we start?
Before we get into the readers' questions, because we never have enough time for readers' questions. We rarely did, because we go off on tangents. Very quickly, we have a Facebook group now. So, Jake, how do they find the Facebook group?
Well, you can literally just search the Black Art Podcast on Facebook and it'll come up. It's public, so there's no veil for it to be hidden behind. There's no secret password. It's nothing you have to knock on three times. It's just the Black Art Podcast. Nice. But if you're really, really adamant about finding it directly, I think you, in the last podcast, you pinned a comment with the link.
Well, yeah, actually, there'll be a pinned comment with a link in this episode and also added to our website, which is theblackartco.com. There'll be a link to the Facebook group, which I could probably do live. I could add that live. That's a good point. I didn't think to add it. But yeah, one thing we felt like we were missing was a dedicated Facebook group for all people to like link up, because I know not everyone that listens to the podcast is a member of the Society of Secrets, which was where most of the conversation goes down with the community. So just for the podcast only, we're having a Facebook group, search the Blackout Podcast, or go to the comments of this video or last week's video, or go to theblackartco.com. But yes, exciting stuff, because, well, one of the things you've shared in there, right, you told me, is that the keychain artwork.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the image files for the very, very silly EDC mentalism kind of effect.
I don't think that's a silly effect, dude. It's a really good trick.
Well, what I said in the post when I shared it was, it's a very simple idea, a tiny trick, but it could totally be built upon to be something a lot bigger if anyone wants to jam or share ideas.
So for anyone that didn't hear that trick, basically that's a free trick right there in the Facebook group. You can go and download it and just start using it straight away. But for anyone that didn't hear what the trick is, because we have a bunch of new listeners, do you want to explain very briefly what the effect is?
As brief as humanly possible, yes. It's a key ring with a poem on one side, and you would show it to a participant and ask them to read it aloud. They read the poem and then put it down, and using whatever force method you desire, we discussed a couple of ideas for them, but there's also some surefire actual releases from other people, but it's essentially a Paris force, the city of Paris you force upon them. So once they name this city, apparently freely, you show them that the first letter on each line of the poem spells out Paris, FR, and then when they turn over the key ring, it says I love FR with a Eiffel Tower instead of an I.
Nice.
But there's also the files for if you didn't want to get it printed as a key ring. There's files for a little kind of keepsake card that someone might keep in their wallet from like our first holiday together. But those files are on there as well.
You're a saint, Jake.
Yeah, thank you. At least someone acknowledges it.
As you were doing that, I used that as a as a moment of misdirection to add the Facebook group to the website.
Nice. Good work.
Facebook discussion group. I'm doing it right now.
So I expect to see a lot more than the 10 members currently there when we put this podcast out.
Yeah, in fairness, I'm surprised we even have 10 because we have not advertised it in any stretch of the imagination.
No. We're niche boys.
Niche boys. I cannot leave this link here without adding an icon to it. But if I do that, I'll get distracted.
Yes, and we don't have time for that because we're keeping it tight.
Tight. Very tight. Very tight. So let's start off with some users' questions, man.
Hell yeah. So we're going to play the audio one first, and this was from Seth. He has sent an audio question previously, but this is his new one. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, hope y'all are doing well. I had a question. Are either of you familiar with cardology or the concept of a life card? It's kind of like the equivalent of a star sign, but instead of a star sign, it's a playing card based on the day you're born, and that determines whatever characteristics about whatever. But it's something I find fascinating, and I've been messing around with different card plots surrounding it, and I don't know, I thought it seemed like something that would be up y'all's alley. Interested to hear if you've ever explored it. Cheers.
Thanks, Seth.
Great question, and it's absolutely you're a mentalist, and you're quite into like the palmistry type stuff as well, right? So I'm guessing right up your street.
Oh, right up my street. I explored that kind of side of things a little bit more when I wasn't into tarot, and then the tarot's kind of overtook that. But yeah, I mean, you can. It's a very, very creative arena for any kind of reading, whether it's cold reading or whether it's information that you actually have that you're using the cards to tie into. And it's also a great framework just to introduce the cards and do other effects with. If you're discussing, you know, this is what cards used to be used for. They used to be used to predict the future or read someone. It's a great framework to play in. It's a nice playground. And understandably, it does only work with certain kinds of performers. If someone is performing to, you know, they're spectators and they're doing tricks with their iPhone or maybe really visual things, and then they start talking about, you know, reading someone's future with cards, it doesn't really gel too well. It probably does appeal to a certain kind of form a little bit more, but there's stuff in there, the life card stuff, there's little things that you could easily pull out and use in any kind of routine, really. But from a performer perspective, stuff like that, I find it's really handy to have cribs, whether it's of your own creation or, you know, that you've used someone else's creation. I never deep dived into cardology enough to have a decent crib. With stuff like palmistry, I've came up with my own kind of cribs for really easy reading systems. But and with tarot as well, the major arcana, there's fairly easy ways you can go about delivering quite a convincing reading. But with cardology, I haven't really delved into that. The good thing is, with a lot of these things, you can just make it up on the spot. Like, oh, two of clubs, that's someone who used to be quite a deep thinker, but has maybe leaned a bit more towards a chiller life because they're a bit sick and tired of the noise in their head. But who's to say it isn't?
I heard a great tip from somewhere, and it's to reel off like a bunch of information.
Mm-hmm.
Completely out there, but then the last thing you reveal is a dead-on hit.
Yeah,
and then they confirm it all. So, for example, if you were going to think of the two of clubs, I would say something like, "Jake, I can see that you're a very hateful person. I can see that recently you don't say anything out loud, don't confirm or deny anything, right? But just look at me. I can see you're a hateful person. I can see that last week you kicked a puppy. I could also see that you are" into weird sex games, and I don't want to say this out loud, and I'm also seeing that your card was a black card. Yes. And then
yeah,
and that confirmation to everyone else confirms everything else. But as I'm telling you, like, don't say anything out loud, and then I ask you one question. I obviously you wouldn't do the stupid stuff that I just did there.
No, you got two right.
I don't even want to guess what it is. I hope you didn't pick that puppy in a weird sex game hatefully last week.
Never. Just on the subject of that, I think a lot of people are hesitant to introduce anything like that into any kind of routine. I can't remember whose publication it was, which is going to haunt me until my dying day. But there is a easy palm reading for magicians book. And I'll look up who it is and I'll post her in the Facebook group or the Instagram or anything like that. And in the introduction to it, he says he'd spoken to a lot of other magicians who are like, why are you using this in your walk around set? It's not magic. And he said to them, yeah, but when people see that I'm doing this, I have a queue of 20 people next to the table, which no magician has ever had. People who aren't normally into magic who give him a second chance because they're like, oh, he's reading someone's palms at a wedding or whatever like that. It is a powerful tool for someone who is actually working, purely because you can adapt to the situation. And if it is a group of, not to, you know, not to generalize, but if it is a group of middle-aged women, say, they might be more interested in something like that, and then, you know, slowly ease them into some of your card tricks.
Yeah, that's a really good point there that you've touched upon about easing people into your magic. Is that if they're not into it at all, that then you suddenly hook them some way, and then they're responsive to what you do, they suddenly become like a bit of your champion, a bit of a champion for you, and then they will open up, because a lot of people don't know that they like magic. You know, they say, they instantly shut it down. They always think of it with negative connotations, or they think of goofy stuff until they actually see good things. And there's a great example of David Blaine performing magic on a pier. I think, what pier is it? It's a famous one, Santa Monica Pier, maybe. And it's from one of his early TV specials. And he goes to show magic to these two older ladies sitting on a bench, and they're like, they don't want to see it.
Yeah.
And he convinces them eventually to watch it, and they loved it. They loved the magic by the end, but initially they didn't want to see it. And I bet, like, with people who are like that sort of tough crowd, finding the common ground or something which is more of a gateway, even though to us it's like, it would feel like, if somebody showed me palmistry to get me into a magic trick, I'd be like, get out of my face. But you know what I mean? It could really work.
Yeah,
it's interesting that you touched upon that.
You play to the crowd, don't you? It's whatever is needed.
I have done readings, like cold readings with performing, and I have to say it does amplify the reaction. I don't enjoy doing it. That's the main thing. I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I can hand on heart say that it completely like makes the reaction. It takes the magic in a different direction.
Yeah. At some point, I'd like to put out a few short things about how to incorporate them successfully into something, you know, without it feeling like a completely isolated, separate part of the performance. I was writing something the other day actually about palmistry, and what I love in any kind of performance is the intimacy. Like I will perform to 1, 2, 3 people. I'm not a parlor magician or a stage magician or even really a walk around magician. I like intimate little moments, and stuff like that is bigger.
Just hanging up on that for a second is that I always find it funny that people, and I think it's because of the stigma other magicians give other magicians, but I just class you as a magician. You're a magician.
Yeah. You know what I mean? 100%. I mean, even if I just sat in a dark room and it was a hobby, I'd still call myself a magician.
Yeah.
Which it is. I do sit in a dark room and it is a hobby. but what I was going to say, if anyone is hesitant at all to get into that stuff, because there's a bit of memory work involved in certain readings. The very first thing that I ever came up with, and I don't think I've seen anyone else ever do it, this as a crib, but my crib for reading palms was those with heart get ahead in life, and that's from top to bottom. The top most like significant line is heart, and then head, and then life. And I always just remembered those with heart get ahead in life, and just move from top to bottom.
Oh, nice.
As you know, interpret whatever you need to.
Yeah, and even saying that, you're not really divulging or even attempting to divulge information about them. You're giving them an empowering statement, which they could feel is about themselves, which you can't really take. No one's going to take that statement as a bad thing unless they are.
No.
Right? Like, you can't miss with that is what I'm saying.
Yeah. But what I usually do is just try and heart, head, life. And it's the easiest kind of cold reading Barnum statements you can think of. But then throw in one or two specific things that you think might be relevant. But I just think it's a fun tool to have things like that in your back pocket if you ever do need to. I mean, it's not everyone's style.
Do you know what could be interesting? I'm sure I'm probably nowhere near the first person in history to consider this sort of easy way to get into it, to attempt it and still, but still be comfortable in your performance is imagine you're going to, I'll take it to a card trick because it's really easy to use that as the baseline that we all understand. Yeah. But if you perform it in the context of a card trick, right? And you peek the card that someone selected and you start basically, say it's, you know, just a couple down from the top, so you're not going to be there all day. But you say, I'm going to go through the cards and I'm going to get feelings about people in the audience around here for each card. Or this, or each card has, maybe not for everyone, you say each card has its own characteristics and every person has its own mate of a card. Going back to what Seth said in his question, every person has their own birth card, right? Mm-hmm. So as I deal through, I'm just going to tell you what I get the feeling of each card. And hopefully I don't have to do anything. I'll just describe you when I have your card. So then I don't know, maybe face down so they don't see it. I'm not sure. But you start dealing face down, right? And not as obvious as this, but you the cards that are wrong, you'd give very obviously bad things, or not bad things, but things which nobody really wants to agree with. But I wouldn't do it as obviously as this.
Yeah.
So you know, the first card, this type of card means is always for like a sort of jealous, bitter sort of person, and turn it over. No, it's wrong. I don't think this is for you. This next, you know, you do a few cards. This next sort of person always seems to get themselves into trouble and are always down on their luck. And for some reason, they can never get a, you know, and I wouldn't make it as obvious. I would maybe give them a bit more like balanced readings, but ones that people just like, just kind of don't want to be that card.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get to theirs. And then you say things like, I'm getting the feeling you've recently, within a recent few months, you've had to take a little bit of medication, nothing serious, but a little bit. And you're the type of person that you can be the life and soul of the party when you're surrounded by people that you would call your true friends.
Mm.
But actually you are quite an introvert when around people that you're not fully trusting of. And I see you as the type of person that when you're in the zone, you can easily sit down and binge an entire show of Netflix, right? In one sitting, and like, unlike some people. But the card I'm getting for this is and then you turn over the selected card. And so it's not really hardcore reading. And even if you get a full description of them wrong, or the statement, the Barnum statement's wrong, it doesn't matter because the card is correct.
Mm.
So it's a way to ease yourself in without having any fear of failure.
Yeah. But a lot of people are polite when you do anything like that, and you can just play things off as hits, even if you didn't get them. No one's going to pull you up about the three things you got wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic question. You know, the one thing that I love, the plot line that I love is the birthday card plot. And I've never found the one that absolutely suits my performance to a T, because it's so fascinating when you say, when you start off, because I've performed quite a lot of them. And it's quite fascinating when you begin to just, I love opening with like some crazy stuff. Well, not crazy stuff, which make people go, wow. Oh, wow. So you say, do you know that that everybody has their own playing card? It's where the term birthday card comes from, actually, which isn't true, but, and they go, really? Oh yeah. Well, do you know what a deck of cards is? And they say, yes. And you say, how many cards are in a deck of cards? 52. How many weeks are there in the year? 52. How many seasons are there? 4. How many suits are there? 4. How many cards are in each suit? 13. How many phases? How many lunar phases are there each time? There's 13. And then if you add up all the numbers and values in the deck, it comes to 360. Is it 65 or 66 plus Joker for the leap year, whatever?
Yeah.
365 for argument's sake, which is the exact amount of days there are in a year. The entire deck of cards is based off of the Georgian calendar. And people don't know that. And that's where birthday cards come from. And fascinatingly, everyone has their own card, including you. Now, I don't know what your birthday is, but I'm going to have you select a card or name a card out loud. And then, well, it's a few different ways you can do it, you know, at that point. But I just love that whole little setup, that script, that premise is really fascinating on its own. It's interesting on its own.
Yeah. That's why, like, people because it's actually that. Interesting.
Yeah, it's actually interesting on its own. And the other, what's the other one? There are other months, other seasons of the year. You have hot seasons and cold seasons. Hot for the red suits, cold for the black suits, and that's another one. Yeah, but I think there's even there might be a few more.
There definitely is. I have a PDF saved somewhere that's got tons of stuff like that in.
But it's fascinating, and I think I love any trick that can that can essentially be universally fascinating. Yeah. Just from the get-go, you know that thing I told you about. I don't think I've spoken about it on air, and I kind of don't want to at the minute. But about the lottery, how you can say to someone, "I guarantee you, I could win the lottery next weekend," and they go, "No chance." And then you prove them for a fact that you can win the lottery, and then you go into the effect from there. Such an interesting hook, and then to continue forward with that, you don't need to win them over anymore. Or as hard then.
Yeah. Speaking on that subject, then, where there's certain, not styles, but where there's certain small little bits that you can add to a routine that you might not be comfortable doing because it doesn't fit your style or anything like that. In the Facebook group, you know, if anyone is interested, I'll post some of like the really easy cribs that I've created for tarot or palm or anything like that. If anyone's interested and anyone wants to speak about it and they're interested in trying it, but they don't want to memorize a whole tarot deck and things like that, let me know in the Facebook group.
Dude, that's wicked. Thank you so much. I need to make a Facebook account just because I don't have Facebook anymore.
No.
But I need to make like a Lloyd Black Art account or something just so I can purely check this.
Oh, yeah. And it also gave me another good idea that actually then I'll start some kind of a thread for very modern Barnum statements. Because sometimes when you listen to someone and they're talking, it's these completely not out of date, but they're timeless statements. But there is a place for modern stuff. You know, like if you said to someone, this sounds a bit silly, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but have you thought about maybe like deleting your social media accounts the past 2 or 3 months? Or have you? You know, stuff like that.
Wow. That's a great one.
Mm.
That's a great one. And that someone goes, no, I live for the gram, mate. Fantastic. All right. There's a couple of questions from the Society of Secrets. But you said, did you have a few more written down as well from other people?
I have some one or two comments from your YouTube video that might be worth discussing, but let me bring up the Society of Secrets and double check.
Well, yeah, I got that in front of me right here. From the SOS, the SOS.
Yeah, do you want to go through them first then?
Yeah, Alex Bow asks, here's a couple of questions. Question one, what is your purpose in following and performing the art of magic?
What is my purpose? It's a very interesting, deep question that I'm completely unqualified to answer. it's the same as a lot of things, isn't it? It's what I love.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I have a purpose. Do you know, I do get really excited by, I don't know if excited is the correct term. It does fill me with like a certain sense of pride when I create things that haven't been created before.
Yeah.
Or when I do something that sets off a trend and other people start to like, you know, copy it and things. There's some, I don't know what it is about that. I suppose it's just ego.
Yeah.
It really is probably an ego-driven thing. But I do like the idea of one day coming up with at least like one principle that somebody would look back on in 100 years' time and be like, wow, that was created by that little fat kid from Wales. You know, like so there's something about that. Because I always think about this phrase that a man dies twice, right? You die when your physical body finishes its lifeline. And the second time is when somebody utters your name for the very last time.
Mm.
And I like the idea of hopefully one day being remembered for doing at least like one thing. Hopefully one thing.
Yeah.
What that is, I have no idea. But
my name will never die because of the beautiful X-Files fan fiction that's always on the internet for anyone to see when they search it.
Is there really? All right, dude, probably internet sleuths, find Jake's X-Files fan fiction and post it in the Facebook group for next week so we can read out. Is it like written stuff?
It was probably on a GeoCities website in like 1999 or something.
You know, X-Files terrified me as a kid, man. The one episode with the cannibals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I remember watching it far too young, and it like actually really, really scared me for a long time. And then I just could never listen to the theme music.
That's commonly known as one of the scariest episodes to choose for the one episode you watched as well.
Well, what year did that come out? X-Files Hannibal episode.
What season was that?
Are you like that into it?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. The X-Files Cannibals episode. Let's see when I would have watched this. I was so young, dude, and it literally terrified me. 1993, so I was 5.
Yeah, it was. It definitely wasn't in season one, though. That episode.
I'm pretty sure I had a friend of a friend or something. Something's in my head. It was the creator of the logo, the X-Files.
Really?
Or a family friend of a friend.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they... Oh, name names on here, but their family friend lived in Canada and created the logo or something.
All right. Mm. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I could be completely wrong. Could be misremembered. That's in my head somewhere about that, though. All right. Next question. Let's go. Question 2. How challenging is it to make a career? Is it to make a career in the art of magic?
I am not involved with this conversation because I don't have a career in the art of magic.
I don't think it's very challenging. I don't think it's very challenging. Making a successful career is a different story, but it does depend on like what you want to do and how you define career. You know what I mean? Like to some people, a career is owning a mansion and a fleet of boats. To some people, it's just paying your bills, you know, just living. So you have enough to maybe have one holiday a year. And you've got all your necessities, like a car, TV, food in the fridge. Yeah. Like, you know, that's what some people class as a career. So there's different levels to it. And I think 99% of magic even gigging wise, I don't gig, but 99% of magic / any other career is networking.
Mm.
It's networking. And the better your communication skills, the more easy you are to work with, and the more, the more initiative that you show in any circumstance, the quicker you'll jump those ladders of your magic career to get you places. And then it works the opposite as well. When you're someone that's like really difficult to work with, when you get given opportunities and you drop the ball too. Then it can hold you up. I don't know why Jake's laughing there. You're thinking,
yeah, I feel so targeted. All I've done the past couple of months is drop balls of opportunities.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I actually wasn't describing anyone at all, but I was targeting you for the failure.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
No.
That's my brand.
No, I was just thinking of in my head, literally, I had like an image of like a model, like a person. Like a blank slate that if there's someone that I'm like, okay, I'm going to help you forward with your career, which is the person that I choose. And it's obviously the person but the qualities that people look for are good communication skills, or great communication skills, easy to work with, and have initiative.
Yeah.
And if you have those qualities, you'll get ahead in magic regardless. And this is a strange one, but regardless of your ability. No, it's true. I don't mean this in any like bitchy way, but I could name 100 off the top of my head pros in different fields, whether that's like the magic product industry, gigging magicians, theater performers. I could name so many off the top of my head that are nowhere near the best at what they do, but they absolutely do have the best communication skills. They are the easiest to work with, and they are, and they're people that are go-getters. They get off their arse and their backside, same thing, one cheek for each, and they do and they do the groundwork, and they, you know, and they have a bit of forward thinking, and that's, those are the people that, that get ahead. So if you're willing to do that, if you, if you're that sort of person, then no questions asked will you make a career.
I guess the hardest part
is making the leap, right?
It takes a lot to put yourself out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It takes a lot to also leave another career to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially if you, if you have like a family and you've got bills to pay. I mean, I did it. I quit Illusionist with nothing to fall back on. I know I had like my name a little bit.
Yeah.
But I didn't take that for a given. And I had nothing, but I used my networking skills to get in and get work with Murphy's, work for Murphy's. And I started a YouTube channel. Basically, I already had like 1,000 subs or something small like that, but not like, you know, a lot of people can get 1,000 subs very quickly, quicker than I could have, but essentially no YouTube channel. And I just, and if you, you can all live go back and track that, that what I was doing, it was just grinding and trying to do things different. And so, I think anyone can do it, because I, and that's the other thing. I don't have, I'm not, and I don't, and I'm not, this is not saying it for virtue signaling. Is that the word? But I'm not looking, I'm not looking for anyone to say the opposite. I'm not a great creator. I'm not a great performer. There are thousands of magicians that are better in every single field and category that I try to specialize in than me. But I don't think all of them work as hard or can communicate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also, you never need to look at other people and think that you're in a competition with them. Just be in a competition with yourself. What's the famous saying? Comparison is the thief of joy. If you spend all your time thinking, oh, I'm not as good as this person, I'm not as good as this person, you're never going to let yourself get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I had to drop my ego a long time ago. Just
could have fooled me.
No, but like, you know, I just look at other creators and I just think, you guys are astounding, and all I can do is just bring my own stuff to the table that I enjoy and just know that the rest of you guys are like on a, it's just on a different level.
It's why, and I do the same, it's why we preface everything with, I know this isn't that good, or this isn't that good, but it's it's weird.
It's so funny that we judge other magicians, or not we, but other magicians. Like I've always said, and I've said this on, especially on my lives, like I think every idea is a good idea. There's always something in a good idea, because some of the best tricks ever came from people, other people saying no to someone's idea, and then one person going, oh, you definitely have something there, work on it a bit harder, and it ends up being the best thing they've ever seen. I don't think we should ever put people down for ideas or attempting ideas.
No, not at all. You know what I mean? Unless it's the ideas that were in my notebook we read out on that like third episode.
Oh, the chained bears one?
Yeah.
That was a great idea, actually, dude.
Maybe we'll revisit that at some point.
That was really good. That's what brought the gummy bear from Watch Trick to life. And that was all you.
Sweet. I'll take credit for that.
It was literally a sweet trick. Next question.
Go on.
There's a few more. And I really like this question, but I don't know how much our listeners will like it, because it's just going to be, it's very much what me and Jake like talking about. It's what is magic? Is it science, art, trick, or reality?
It's what you make of it. How would you define something? I mean, it's performing. But in some ways, it's not. You know what? I'm gonna reel off a list of statements here and then go, oh, but it's not. Oh, but it...
just do it. This is the type of discussion I live for.
So it is performing, but it's also not. Because, I mean, if you do magic to one person, that's still performing, I guess. It's entertainment, but some people take it seriously, like it is an art, because it is also an art, but it's also, it can be fun. What a weird thing to define. I don't know. I don't have a good answer. It's all of the above.
Yeah, it's everything and above. It's like the practice of it is, I suppose, how would you describe practice in sport? You know, the practice is a physical, not gateway, but it's a physical event. And then you have the methodological side of it. Is that the word, right?
Yeah.
How the tricks work, which is a combination of things, but primarily I consider it as like a science, because you're working with optical illusions, principles, often maths-based, sometimes psychology-based. So it's a bit of a fusion of science to get the end result. Then the effect itself, like the performance of it, performance is art. I put that in the art category. In America, it was just classified as art officially, like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I don't know. And then there's also like magic is kind of belief too. I'm not sure if the word is belief, but it's emotional. And I don't mean like I'm sad emotional. It's an emotional reaction. It's a chemical reaction in the brain. Because I've said this a few times, I think magic's 100% real. Because if you ever loved someone or you hated someone, that's an emotion that you've experienced. And I wouldn't say that love doesn't exist or hate doesn't exist. It's very real. Just because you can't physically touch it, I think everyone on this planet can say they love someone and they hate someone. Two very basic emotions, right? Two juxtaposing black and white emotions. Well, the moment that you experience, when you see a trick, like, and you see that coin vanish, and there is no explanation at all, right? And you're left with that feeling of wonder. You're experiencing magic, which is an emotion like love and hate. It's a real thing. And even the moment that you experience the magic effect happen, and you're in that, and it can last for the rest of your life, you can have no explanation and you can't even begin to think, and you just believe it's magic. Or it can last for 5 seconds until you go, it was up his sleeve. Mm. But that limbo that you're in, that small oasis in your mind or wherever it lays of magic, that's very real. And to be in that oasis, that some part of you on a subconscious level or a very like frontal level is believing it. You are believing that it's magic.
Yeah.
And I think, so that's why I say magic is belief, because whether you want to or not, there's some level of you which is believing that you've witnessed real magic, which makes rap magic real.
It's very strange that something can be defined by the action and the reaction and everything surrounding it as well. And there's also an interesting thing as well. If someone is a fairly disillusioned character who isn't that into magic, which is fair enough, people have their things and they have their things they don't like. If you were to show them something, they might just call it a trick, and the concept of magic will never exist to them, which is a sad thought.
Yeah.
But it's strange that it is the action and also the reaction.
It's so funny. Like, I think as people, I think magicians inherently are quite logical thinkers. They like to pick things apart. They have like an engineer's brain. And by sort of default, people that think like that like to have definition and meaning. Everything must have a structural place. And I think the irony is that like magic isn't definable in one, like, oh, magic is X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
I think it is like, I used to always want a t-shirt which said magic is and a giant underscore, because it's whatever you want it to be. It's open source. And I can never think of a way of picturing that in a cool image.
Yeah.
Said everything about it. I always remember like Owen Jones, an amazing graphic designer, created a logo for Madison's phrase, magic is dead, with it was a top hat with a rabbit's ears and blood and a dagger going through it. And I thought that was such a fantastic design. And for me, like, magic is whatever you want it to be. And I always thought, oh, what would be a cool logo? I'd love for people to post ideas in the Facebook group, even if it's just like basic sketches in the notes, in your notes app on your phone, or a piece of paper with a pencil, you took a photo of it. But a cool, like, because it is undefinable.
Yeah.
It's undefinable, but it's understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. You can explain it and someone will know what you're talking about. It's not some completely nebulous concept that no one will ever be able to grasp, but it is very hard to define, which is strange considering it's one of, like, I mean, what, the two oldest professions in the world, a magician and prostitute. Like, why can you still not explain it?
Yeah. 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 We're a magic worker. There are other workers. Yeah.
Which reminds me, I need to open my OnlyFans account.
For everyone that can't see the screen right now, he's fanning a deck of cards. Such a good idea, though, for a magic website. It's just fan decks of cards. It's so funny. It's like, I have had the question, what is magic? And I'd love to, well, you can really, but I'd love to have more laymen say, give me the opportunity to answer that question.
Yeah.
Because I'd probably just say, I can't tell you what it is, but I can show you. And then I'd show them a piece of magic and then say, what is that? Or you tell me what that was.
Yeah.
Or what you experienced. You know what I mean? Like that, or just say, like, whatever you're feeling right now that you can't put into words, that is magic.
It'd be a cool idea for a video where that you're explaining what magic is whilst going through. You know, like recently there was a creator and I can't remember his name, but he put out the video where it was the different types of magic. So it was transposition. Yeah. And I can't remember the guy's name. I feel really bad, but it was an awesome video. It'd be cool to see a video like that where someone's trying to explain what magic actually is whilst going through some common principles or effects.
It would be cool for, like, I'm thinking someone like Javier, who's a great, great, great with people, to like have a video of him going up to people saying, so like fast cut in, get up to people, can you describe to me what you think magic is?
Yeah.
And then they all try and describe it. So you get like a big Venn diagram of people's descriptive words of what it is. And then it cuts like section two or part two, which is like, I'm going to show you magic. So then he shows them magic, da 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 da. And then either you would at the end, basically you'd say, try and, or you could say that, oh, like, you've now experienced magic and you just either can you try and describe what it is, or you'd say to them what you're experiencing, what you can't put into words like right now, that is what magic is. It's almost like magic is what fills in the gaps.
It's the negative space.
It's the negative space. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good one. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And you can buy that on a t-shirt from the Black Ark.
We have been working on some sick t-shirt designs, though.
Yeah, for all three listeners. My mum, your mum, and Kaylee.
3 plus 1,000 and whatever it is. YouTube.
That was a really good question.
Yeah, see, I wonder how many people, if anybody is still listening at this point, comment down below on the video or in the Facebook group. Magic is the negative space.
Ooh.
What's something more shorter of a phrase than that, Jake?
What is something more shorter of a phrase than that?
I realize how terrible my English language skills are.
I'm having really weird deja vu. We haven't had this conversation before, have we? No.
No, I don't think so.
No, it must be the magic in the air.
I think we didn't have this conversation and it's just the negative space that's left.
I don't know, way to put me on the spot.
I'm searching thesaurus for negative space.
Yeah. What is I think that apologies to any audio listeners right now whilst we pontificate.
Ooh, I don't even know what that word means.
Just chatting. Just absolutely.
It's like magic is inside out.
Inside out.
That's really magic is. That's the question for everyone else. What if you are listening this far? Comment wherever you can. Magic is the negative space, but also, how could that be rephrased into something more catchy?
More catchy, like
magic is what remains.
Yeah, that kind of works. So, magic is.
Awesome. I'm sure if you had a quote like that before, it's like something is what's. It's what left. It's left over.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can put in quotation marks "is what remains" into Google and see if there's like a. Is that part of a quote?
Maybe.
Education is what remains after one has forgotten what one has learned in school. Albert Einstein.
Oh, so it'd be like magic is what remains when you've.
No. I wasn't thinking about that in like long form, but I just, right, the first quote that came up. I wonder if I can put in, is the negative space into Google. Oh, there's a type of it's an illusion, you know, a negative space illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Of like the two wine glass, the singular wine goblet, but it makes a human face, two human faces. Yeah. That's what comes up when you put in negative space. What are those illusions called?
I don't know.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't have
I should answers. Know.
You should know.
Either way, fantastic question. And we'll stop rambling because I can tell people want us to get off the pot.
Was there any other questions in SOS?
Yeah. Okay, so another question here from Daniel Ras Rothschild, who asks, how do you recognize when a method isn't working for you?
There's a natural kind of snagging point for certain things, isn't there? You can just tell, you can feel something doesn't gel well.
Yeah.
But I mean, if a method isn't working, if there's a couple of different things. I mean, if you're having trouble actually performing it or practicing it, then it's too complicated or it's too long. Maybe you can simplify it, remove some things. A method isn't working if... a method isn't working if... Step in, Lloyd. Help me here. I'm dying. Come on.
For me, a method doesn't work when I can't... like follow the steps completely on autopilot.
Or you can't justify it.
Or it can't be justified. Yeah. If there's something you need to do, whether you need to turn the deck over or someone can't look at the card you hand them, but for some reason they always end up turning it. Yes. Well, it's things like that. For me, I try to streamline my methods as much as possible.
Yeah.
Meaning that there's normally not a lot to happen at all. And then when the method doesn't work, it'll normally stick out like a sore thumb because there's not a lot going on in terms of structure of the routine.
Yeah.
But for me, the method doesn't work. If it's too transparent in like a layperson can see it and I can't disguise it. Mm-hmm. Or B, if I can't do it completely on autopilot.
Yeah. Speaking about the layers is quite a good point because there's a lot of effects that will live or die on how many layers there are in it. Because some kind of super visual magic trick, the extra layers just make it look too complicated or there's too many movements or whatever it is. But if it was a mentalism effect, that one extra layer helps, you know, deflect away from the method you used at the start to determine something else. And it's getting the amount of complications right is a very subtle art sometimes.
Yeah, good point. You know, like one thing is when you like you get so deep in the hole of doing a trick, right? Mm-hmm. And then you, for me, the method doesn't work when I stop and I look at it and I go, what am I doing? Well, I wouldn't actually handle the cards or the coin like that. So why, and I use an example, which would be like twisting the aces, right? Over and over and over, you count these cards in a weird way.
Yeah.
And then like, I think, if I was going to actually magically turn a card over and turn one of the four aces over for whatever reason, I would not be counting the cards to show it turned over. I would just fan them.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And it's the same for all packet tricks. You do all these weird, crazy counts. And it's the reason I don't do packet tricks because in my head, it's like, That's not how you would show four cards.
Yeah.
Not how you do it. So that method doesn't work. And I think so many times, like, magicians get, like, there's a Coin Magic Masterclass coming up on the Society of Secrets this week. And it's like nine methods and a bonus one showing my approaches to single coin vanishes. But there's more of like an undertow of theory that'll run through it, which is that so many magicians, and it's not just coin magic, it's all about other things, right? But so many magicians will start to chip away at methods or try to work a method or create a method from foundations that do not hold any weight current in the modern world. So for like example, and I know I'll get shot for this, but there's so many coin magicians that will do these perfect singular coin vanishes, or they'll do the best French drop you'll ever see in your life, right? And you can be like literally like CGI flawless with it. But you show any kid in the world over the age of like nine this, and what I'm doing to the camera for everyone listening on a podcast right now is that I'm just doing the French drop hold. So I have my fingers holding a coin between my thumb, and I'm going to do a French drop position. You show that symbol to anyone in the world, and they know, or even if they pretend they don't, to be polite, you're telegraphing. You are shining a projector beam that you are doing a coin trick. A trick. It's a trick everyone learns in school. It's there's something about that just that positioning of a coin going like in that awkward position that instinctively tells them that you're going to do a trick.
Mm.
Whereas if you go and ask 10 people to, do they have a 10 pence or a quarter that you can borrow? Watch how they hold a coin and take it out of their pocket, because that's how you should be making your coins vanish. So people will start to work on their own coin vanish method, right? This is where I'm going with it. And they'll begin, right, I'm going to hold the coin like this in a French drop position, or I'll hold it like I'm going to do this thing. And they begin at the place, at a broken, unstable foundation, because already this is wrong. Or it's 2023. And I know I'll be shot by so many magicians for this. Like, and they'll be like, oh, I work and this fools everyone. Great. That's good. And I know it works. Not good enough for my own sanctity of mind. Like for my participants that I'm performing to, it's not good enough for me, but I know it works. So please don't take this as anyone being personally attacked. But when you're trying to create a method from this position, like the French drop program, in the French position, how can I do something new here? For me, oftentimes you need to throw away the books, burn the books, not like they're doing in America right now, but I mean, proverbially, in a lot of cases, start to think about where your methods, don't start from someone else's method. Just sort of have a look in the mirror, essentially, proverbially, and be like, have a long, hard look at not yourself, but the trick in the mirror, and think, why am I counting four cards like that? What am I thinking?
Yeah.
Stop it. It's not right. And now when you start to look at as many tricks as you can with that frame of mind, suddenly you realize there's a lot of places that people haven't done this to. And this is why I say I'm not very creative, because oftentimes I just think I'm the first person through the door.
Mm.
You know, that doesn't make me creative. I'm just the first person that's walked that line.
No, I think there's a lot to be said for being able to recognize which houses of people went into. I'm going to go into the one that no one else has went into.
Yeah. Yeah. that doesn't make me that. I hope you're not trying to say that makes me creative.
No, well, what I mean is there's an art to recognizing what hasn't been done before.
Yeah, there is. I mean, a lot of that comes from experience too.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I in my books, like, I genuinely don't think I'm a great creator. I always say the word relentless. Relentless comes up in my vocabulary a lot when it comes to creating, because I'm just willing to like push a bit further. But there are people out there who are actual incredible, talented, unique thinkers in the world that I ain't.
Well, sometimes brute force is just as good as natural talent.
Yeah, hard work defeats natural talent every single time.
Mm.
unless you're Ronnie O'Sullivan.
from what you were saying then, I think the only time when you can approach a very traditional, very well-known move or method is when that expectation and that saturation of the, you know, the iconography or whatever is intact, is part of the twist or the effect. If you're performing to another magician and the reason you're using a French drop is because you're going to do something completely different, that's when those expectations and that saturation and can work for you. But otherwise,
well, that's literally one of the things I lectured in Blackpool.
Yeah
was to lead them down that garden path. Paint these, like, I say hokey in the least offensive terms, but like these hokey coin positions, and draw attention to it and say, this is what the difference between magic and magic tricks are. This is the magic trick, and you show them how it works, let them in through the door a little bit. And then when they think they know what's going to happen the next time, you come around the front of the house and kick their heads in.
You pretend to paint it red.
Yeah, exactly. Great Which question.
Really great question. That also makes me really, really want to put out like five little effects that are in packet tricks that are not normal, like any other packet tricks. You know, something like a tiny little release where it's packet tricks that aren't counting the cards.
Yeah. I would love to force ourselves to do... To reapproach packet tricks, like completely reapproach them.
Mm.
We're not the first people that will have done it. I'm aware of that. So please don't shout at us. But yeah, like imagine, like, okay, we have to create three packet tricks each, and we're not allowed to use any false counts.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sweet. I'd be down to do that for like long-term homework for the next episode or two or three.
I do have a packet trick without false counts. Super visual too. I'll show it to you because I need to practice it to show it to you, but yeah. I won't use that as one of the things.
Okay, cool. I really like this idea because I've never been a packet trick kind of person. I mean, I have a few things from childhood or, you know, where I've been recommended and I can't help myself from purchasing it because it looks that good. But I've never been too much of a packet person. I don't have hundreds of little sleeves with my cards in. There's a few decent ones I have.
Do you have a favorite? I have a favorite packet trick. I do have one that I like.
I don't think I do. No. Which is a weird answer, but I genuinely don't think I do.
I like NFW. You know, it's just four aces. Like, so it's four aces. One by one, they turn face down.
Yeah.
And then they're all jokers or whatever it's going to be. Mm. I like the premise of that. I'm not saying I like the handling of it. It's the handling works and it'll always get good reactions. Yeah. I personally don't like the handling. But what I like about it is that it's easy to understand. It makes you think one thing is happening and it's got a great kicker ending, which is almost like undeniable. So, I mean, one good way would be like, okay, how do you reapproach that and do it without any false counts to start turning the cards over? You could do some like Guy Hollingworth type, you know, wave the aces moves, maybe. I like the way that there's certain people have done, they justify the count or turning the cards over. This could be something like that. But yeah, I just kind of like that trick.
Down to revisit some of these and see what we can come up with.
I do love the people that just like, who's that guy? Until next time. You know, his videos, he speaks like that. He's just the packet trick king.
Yeah.
Because those are the people in magic that push and push and push and push and just they've burrowed down on one topic and they come up with some incredible, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of his work and I feel bad like I say I don't like count stuff, but it's people like him that push magic further, like the Joel Ryan Fleischers of the world that just go ham on rubber band tricks.
Yeah.
And not like they're all good because it's Joel Ryan Fleischer, but maybe not 99 out of 100 are just not for you, but then he'll push that envelope and you're like, oh, this is game changing, like this is the future.
I don't think anyone will take offense when you say things like that. I mean, because at the end of the day, we still love all of it. It's just that one's like, you know, this is my least favorite child. I still love them.
Yeah, yeah. But one a bit more. Jeez. Well, we had two.
It's just if I was ever put in a situation where I was asked,
yeah,
this is the one that I'd sacrifice.
This would be the sacrificial lamb. Don't mention lamb. Love lamb. Brilliant. Okay, so we have another question here from Zeph in the Society of Secrets. He says, "Do a complete black theater magic show with ultraviolet stage lights. Any takes on this? And what would be a good trick?"
So that's like Japanese theater.
So Daniel says lux, duh, or at least the core idea. And Zeph says won't work since the stage lights are always on. White gloves move in with cards no people have seen, or fluorescent props. It's purely visual magic. Dark assistants can make things fly. So, and he's included some photos of basically a completely black image, and you can just see like the neon outlines of people, you know, like their suits, the stitching of their suits. The seams are neon, or their hats are neon only, but they're wearing like black morph suits, and the same with a woman. It's like a floating mask face there as well. So it really depends in my books, like if you're going to do it to music, or if you're going to really try and show some like proper magic, or is it just like an entertainment performance piece?
Yeah, there's a big difference between if it's, you know, some gloved hands doing shin limb stuff, or doing, you know, stuff to entertain and make people laugh. The first thing that came to my head for some reason, did you ever used to watch a show called Zap when you were a kid?
Yeah, I was talking about this recently. Dude.
Didn't they have one where it was the hands?
Yeah. So what kind of comes to my mind a little bit on this is that I would create like a sort of a story and try and bring it back. For example, I would potentially start with the lights on, but this doesn't have to happen. So I'd almost like show what's supposed to be happening. Maybe I'd walk on in a black morph suit, and I would take a glow stick and crack it. And the minute I crack it, the lights go out and you just see one glow stick, right? And then suddenly that glow stick in slow motion grows really long. And then from behind it unrolls like a neon drape or what's it called? Cloth. And then that gets pulled away, and suddenly there's somebody there in like a suit or something. And so like you're starting, so you mean, can you see like the evolution of where that's like starting? Because people think you're just one person in a black suit on stage. Suddenly this singular glow stick, which they've seen in the light, snaps, becomes a long pole. That now becomes a flag almost. Maybe that's what it could become, is a flag that rolls down.
Yeah.
And then something comes from underneath it. Maybe there's a table there. And I would do things, I would play with the idea of intermittently, like say there's like nine things floating really freakishly in the sky and they all come to a float. I'm trying to click my fingers. The lights flash on and you're still just one person stood on stage. They go back up and instantly everything rises up. So the illusion is twofold. It's the illusion of how, you know, people kind of knowing these things are floating using black art, but also you're creating a secondary illusion of, well, how can that be happening? Because the lights are on and there's no one there. And the moment they go back off, it's floating, you know? And so I personally would flip it on its head a little bit to try to not do what everyone else does with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I think that'd be interesting.
I really like that idea. I like the idea of the secondary illusion, whatever way someone were to decide to go, because I could also imagine something where, you know, the lights turn on, but there's this contraption that as if, oh, you know, there's 20 people operating two hands.
Yeah.
In a reverse kind of sense, like, look how much work has gone into it, but that's not what's happening.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very cool, actually, that is, Jake. I like that. I like that inversion thing of they just think it's so simple. And then at the end, obviously, you can just come back and like all the...
You know, if they were just doing a simple coin vanish or something.
Mm.
Yeah. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, I want to say that at the end then of the routine, I would somehow find a way to bring all the light back together, all culminate back into one spot, back into one tiny dot, back into one tiny line, and the lights come on, it's just a glow stick.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
You know? And then maybe for whatever reason, you're now not in the morph suit, but it's somebody from the audience or some, and you're somewhere else, which would need to be tidied up in a much different way. But that's kind of like where my head goes with it. I think it could be really fun, right?
If there's no scripting and there's no dialogue, it has to be, there has to be a story or a through line of some kind, as if it's a silent movie. And so I would incorporate the fact that there is no light into the story, almost as if all of these effects are being done because they're trying to say there's like a little light and they're trying to put it back in a light bulb. And it'll, whatever effects are done because there's a purpose, because there's an end goal, and because that's the story. You're trying to get this light back on, or whatever it is.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm wondering whether you can use like sort of mild pop culture themes throughout. For example, you could put like a bit of scary music on, and there's like five lines in the air, like steps, and a red light comes on, and it's like a little bouncing ball, like from the Changeling film. Comes down, that red bouncing ball then becomes E.T.'s finger, you know, somehow there's an outline of E.T. So you create like a few thematic things, and intermittently like the light's coming on and there's nobody there, or everything's frozen, or you think it's one thing and there's no way it could be something else, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that.
So hope that helps. Hope it's not too much of a challenge. This is the beautiful thing about when I like do consulting, which I don't do anymore, and actually I need to get back to someone, but is that you can throw out these wild ideas, and then unless you have to be on set to like help create them, normally you'll just get a bit of footage like a year later if somebody's gone off and done it. It's like, oh, wow. And I can take all the credit for this. No, you can't. But you know what I mean? It's
what I always liked about, if you imagine, you know, like breakdancers or body popping and stuff like that, if someone who is quite good with their movements and mime artists, I always liked the idea of where they slow down for something.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you are working with no lights, and it's whether it's UV things or things lit up, you could embrace that kind of this slow motion things and have that worked into a storyline somewhere, where if something is thrown up and then it's just very slowly going through the air, you could. The hands could go do something else and then catch this thing. And well, whatever it is, I like the idea of isolating something like that, like a mime artist would. Or
what if it was something along the lines of playing with distortion as well? So like maybe you have like a big yellow bouncing ball, boing, boing, and you do that with the lights on. Maybe you start with a big yellow bouncing ball or a white ball, whatever it is. Inside is a light. You can see that with the stage lights on. And then it goes black and it's still bouncing up and down. And then suddenly it stops, floats dead. And the lights come back up and suddenly it's a tennis ball on your hand, but you're really far in front. Or they actually see the ball shrink in the black art, in the darkness. It never cuts away. So they never see it like be switched.
Yeah.
And when the lights instantly ping back on, you're now holding a lit up like light bulb or bright ping pong ball. So they've seen it shrink using black art, but there's no switch moment. Well, there obviously is, but it's there. So you play with a lot of perspective ideas. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I like the idea of playing with perspective, because at first it might seem a bit limited to be like, these are the light up hands and a couple of props. But using perspective, because there's a black background and you can do so much more. I mean, if you had like a little sun appear, but then when you, the hand reaches up to grab it, and when it brings it forward, it's actually, you know, a huge thing or whatever, a small thing, whatever way it works. Using perspective to add to the fact that it's just these little hands and the props is really cool.
What if it was like you have like a square of neon, so it's a little about the size of a playing card, but square, and it's like a neon border that grows, turns sort of as if it's face down, and the lights flick on, and it's now a table.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But you know what could be cool is if the magic happened after the trick. So before the performance begins, you walk on with your hood back, you're in a black morph suit, and you say, "Before I begin, I need to tell you to do this when we give you the signal." There will be a moment in the performance where you'll see five lights. It'll be red and it'll go green. It'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. On green, you all have to do what I instruct you. Take your phones out now. I want all of you to turn your flash on. Okay? Keep your camera running. When you see the light go green, I want you all to take a photo of the stage. See you in 3 minutes. Hood on, lights go black. Performance happens, the red light comes on, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. As that's happening, like the most chaotic moment of the event is also going on. So like there's tables flying, or what seems to be tables, people flying, everything like that. Everyone in the audience takes a photo at exactly the same time. Boom, big flash, right? The show carries on. And at the end of the show, it says, please take a look at the photo you took. And when they take a look at the photo, the stage is completely empty.
Yeah. That's cool. I think that's something where you would have to, you'd have to workshop it and get like 20 people in to test if it actually plays. Just because it has to be surefire if it's performance, doesn't it?
And yeah, yeah.
But there's something there with the flashlights or a photo, but you have to think of all the
what
who's going to look at the photo when they've just taken it and ruin the surprise. And you'd need to test so much, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But you, I mean, also the flashes may not be enough to light the stage up. So I'd actually light the stage up like with a flick, flash of white light. And the way it can be done is just that like you are doing stuff with people in morph suits, but for that one moment, like 10 seconds, I would have like invisible thread holding everything up and just swinging around just so you can get off stage and come back on, reposition, grab it and continue moving. And then you have that moment. And hopefully some people would look at the phone. Maybe there'd be a message that says, lock your phones now or something.
Yeah.
But like the excitement would start to build as the word would spread. Like, oh my God, there's nothing on stage. What? You know? And also when the light comes on, anything neon would hopefully be slightly drowned out because it would also overexpose the cameras.
Yeah.
Because they would be in dark mode. Mm-hmm. So you could also use that to your advantage as well.
I really like the that question, that idea, because there's a couple of just images I've got stuck in my head now and I can't get them out. I can't get the image out of my head of there being these just these gloves doing whatever the little effect is. And then there's like, you know, a lightning flash with the noise and the lights coming on whilst it goes off. And there's 30 writhing bodies in morph suits just operating this small little thing. Like they're crawling out of hell.
Yeah.
Just packed together, operating these tiny little hands. But that's not what's happening. But I love that.
It'd be crazy if, like, kind of like what you're saying, I think, where they take a photo and there's a car on stage or an elephant. Right?
Oh, that'd like, be a fun route. Yeah. Yes.
Just like, and it could, because it's a photo, you could, like, use the screen to put, like, a, you know, to time it exactly with that white flash. Or some people will get the elephant, some people won't. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or it could be like it's an actual elephant, but that collapses, or so it is actually in amongst everything.
Mm.
Or something crazy where it's just so out of left field. They'd just be like, what is happening?
Yeah. There's so much to play with there. That's such a cool idea.
It'd be so cool if they took a photo and when they look back, they are looking at another audience watching the performance. And you did it in a theater that was like a double theater, you know, so people think they're on all on one side of the stage, but actually it's a double performance and there's like a mirror so you can't see through it. Jesus, you know, like a two-way mirror.
Yeah. the poor roadies, the poor audio engineers for that.
That would be the gnarliest thing ever, though. Like the reveal is that there's been another audience the entire time.
Just edit that out, dude. That's such a good idea. Don't give it away.
I know. Yeah.
That's so cool.
That is pretty cool, isn't it? Well, if anyone does that in a magic show and it hasn't been done before the 17th of April, 2023, then you heard it here first. So that's readers' questions.
Sweet. It feels like we've been talking for a long time. What time are we on? Are we not even going to... Is this going to be a readers' question episode?
It has to be. I can't go any longer than this, I think. Because I'm trying my best to not make these podcasts super long finish them. If what phrase shall we ask people to say if they're still listening at this point?
If you are still listening at this point, elephant on the stage.
Ooh, I like it a lot.
Yeah. We got a Derek Delgadio reference in as well there, I guess.
Yes. Ah, yes. Yes. Great shout. Man, I am fired up.
Yeah. It's strange because I wonder what people will think of this when it's purely just that there's no, like, here's one trick that we've spoken about or given away or came up with. This is a bit of a more the theory side of things, which I hope some people will appreciate.
Yeah. I hope, well, this is the thing. If nobody listens to these, this is our sort of like weekly therapy session. Maybe yeah. You just to force some, not force, but like, you know, tell people sort of the reason why we started this in the first place.
Oh, Lloyd had some blackmail material on me that I really didn't want released.
It was actually called, it was fan fiction of the XXX Files.
Yeah, that was it.
Mulder cannibalized Scully. Mulder ate Scully. What? A group of wild teens ate Scully. What's wrong with that? It was one of the episodes. I've seen it. And you wrote the fan fiction.
Why did... you know what? I'll be completely honest with you. I remember the original message you sent me. And I can't remember the exact reasoning. Besides, I think we get each other in our view on some things. And the things that we don't have the same opinion on will cause good conversation anyway.
Yeah, it was basically that. And there was a lot of... overlap in the way we thought about, especially like long con tricks and actual creating moments of magic and not just worker run and gun repeat table hopping effects. But we didn't really get much of a chance to. I kept saying to you, oh man, let's have a jam this week. And we'd be like passing ships and the stars wouldn't align. So I figured, like, why don't we make a thing of it? Let people listen if they want to listen, like let them in behind the scenes. But at least now we have like a weekly, that's why I say therapy session. Like, it's a weekly session where we get to talk about what we would do on a jam session.
Yeah.
And hopefully it does a bit of good.
Yeah. And it's great because it's almost like it's court mandated. So you could, you know, just ignore me 1 week, but you can't ignore this. It's your appointment.
That's true. And God damn it, I try.
Yeah, everyone does, dude.
Oh man. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. This was episode 7. I have no idea how I'm going to make a thumbnail for this, man. You need to help me.
I will try and think of something.
Cool. And I'm really excited to see how many people join the Facebook group.
Yes, please do, because it's just me and a bunch of bots in there.
I need to... Oh, I hate Facebook so much, but I desperately want to hang out with people in the group. So maybe I'll become the elephant in the room.
Mm. I mean, you could always just check it, like, you know, the 20 minutes before each episode starts recording or something like that.
That's true. I would like to post stuff in there for people, though, like some free tricks.
Yeah, that's where I'm interested to use it for, because there might be things that we come up with that use principles that we can't really talk about on YouTube, maybe.
Yeah, maybe we should make the group so they just have to join it, at least, so they can't read everything unless they join. Because some of you
I'll change that.
Let's do that. And we can lie and say there's loads of good stuff, so you have to join.
Yeah. But if anyone actually is interested in anything specific, just ask. Not to kind of like, you know, proclaim any kind of great expertise, but I'm always down to jam. I'm always down to talk about anything that I've shown any interest in. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to wrap this up then, I think, for everyone. Thank you all for tuning in. This is such a fun episode. Do you know when I read that black art question on stage? I was, or not black art, but like luminance. I was like, oh, I don't even know if this is going to be how I'm going to feel, if I'm going to have anything for this.
Yeah, same.
And then I suddenly feel like
weird images now stuck in my head.
It was the most fun question.
Mm. That was
amazing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you to all
everyone.
Questions.
Thank you all for listening. Go to theblackartco.com to find updates. Listen to us on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. All of that good stuff. Join the Facebook group. We're just begging at this point.
Please.
Please show us some love.
I need to feed all of my children, including the one I don't like them.
It's true. It's true. The goldfish. Bye, everyone.
Peace.